This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, April 29th. I'm Dave Benninger. Glad to have you joining us this afternoon. Coming up this week,
I'm getting ready to put in my potatoes because they take a few weeks to come out of the ground. And I'm thinking with this early spring-like year that, you know, I might be able to get away with it.
We'll see what some of you are up to this wacky spring. A quick whisk around the state to check in on politics du jour. Alaska Republicans are in Fairbanks for the state convention, and state lawmakers are still in Juneau thinking about maybe wrapping this one up.
Because this oil and gas tax credit bill is so important, everything now is revolving around that and whether a compromise can be worked out.
Two of APRN's reporters give some scoop. The Lake and Peninsula Borough Manager Nathan Hill joins for our Friday conversation.
We're tightening our belt, being proactive about our spending and thinking about planning into the future and how to make that sustainable.
And some Tualatin young poets drop by to share some of their work ahead of tonight's poetry slam in Dillingham.
Remember this, the next time you see someone with an issue, don't just throw them a tissue, you say something.
Those stories and more after a look back of some of this week's news. Native Youth Olympics wrapped up in Anchorage last weekend. The team from Dillingham won first overall in addition to getting the team sportsmanship award for the third year in a row. Head coach Carl Clark said it's been 15 years since the Wolverines took home the first place trophy.
And this team just pulled it off. I mean, they're a great bunch of kids that have a lot of talent.
So. How's it feel to get first overall and sportsmanship?
Cloud nine.
Four Dillingham athletes took first place in their individual events. After a shaky start, fishing for Togiak herring continues now, 2 weeks since the first spotting of spawn. Last night, as the winds died down, Saners had their biggest day yet, bringing in over 3,100 tons. Icicle's Warner Liu says he's been surprised by the late season quality.
Consistently really good. This is 11-12% roe content, and that's typically you only see that sort of thing in the gillnet fishery, but it's been great all season.
A few boats have dropped out now, but four companies are still buying fish. Dillingham police say they have not figured out who stole a rental car last Saturday night and rolled it off of Waskey Road. A Dillingham police car also rolled over looking for that vehicle. The field of candidates for Dillingham's middle and high school principal job has been narrowed now to one top finalist who will meet with the community this weekend. Superintendent Danny Frazier says Monty Thacker has 8 years experience as a principal and worked as an assistant principal before that.
He was a principal in Wichita Falls, Texas at a school of 18,000 students and is leaving Anchorage for a charter school. So he's worked in a lot of different situations.
Outgoing principal Bill Schwann is taking a job next year in Wrangell. The Lake and Peninsula School Board surprised longtime educator Linda Richter with the BP Teachers of Excellence Award when she Skyped into a recent meeting from Kakanak.
In the end, she was pretty much speechless, and the board was very emotional. Linda's been with us since 1979, so it was a very worthy award for her.
Superintendent Ty May speaking there. Richter has taught at 6 Lake and Penn schools over more than 2 decades with the district. Dennis McLaren, the head of EPA Region 10, was called to testify before the U.S. House Oversight Committee on Science, Space, and Technology Thursday. McLaren led agency efforts to create preemptive 404C restrictions in the Bristol Bay watershed that will block development of mines like Pebble. Here's McLaren defending that work.
Our proposed action in Bristol Bay is not a veto. It's not a final action. And the proposed determination does not prevent Pebble Limited Partnership from filing any permit applications.
Over the course of 2 hours, he was grilled by Republican majority members on the committee, but defended by Democrats like Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson from Texas.
It is about protecting a unique environmental resource. In that regard, I find it ironic that EPA has been condemned in recent weeks for doing too little to protect the water in Flint, Michigan, and at the same time as they are being condemned by some of the same committee for doing too much to protect the water in Bristol Bay, Alaska.
That was the second hearing the committee has held on the topic. It also deposed former EPA ecologist Phil North and released those transcripts this week. A group of islands in Lake Iliamna will be permanently protected from large-scale development under a new 14,000-acre conservation easement. Tim Troll is the executive director of the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust, which worked out the conservation agreement with 2 villages. He says the islands are being conserved in part because they provide haulouts for a very unique population of freshwater seals.
Lake Lake Eliab is one of the few places in the world where seals have adapted, apparently, fresh water. And it's the only population of seals in the United States, and one of only two in North America. The others are in Russia and Finland. So pretty unique, and something that only Bristol Bay has.
The islands are owned by the Pedro Bay Corporation and Iliamna Natives Limited. The conservation easement does not affect ownership of the property. It's an agreement that the two native corporations will not do any major development there. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. Listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. The largest herring fishery in the state of Alaska is not only ongoing, it's actually going really well when the weather allows. Yesterday, there was big harvest out of Kalukuk Bay. Fish and Game puts the tally at 3,163 tons harvested by the seiners still participating. The cumulative total is almost 14,000 out of a quota of 20,000 tons. It's been 2 weeks since the first reported sighting of spawn. We turn now to Warner Liu, who's the fleet manager for Icicle Seafoods, which is buying from seiners and gillnetters this season. He spoke with me this morning from aboard the floating processor Gordon Jensen out near the grounds. Warner, good morning. What's the good word from there today?
Great fishing last night. The herring continued to be ripe and large enough, and so everyone loaded up as best they could.
And how's the quality still, Warner?
The quality remains consistently really good. This is 11-12% low content, and that's typically you only see that sort of thing in the gillnet fishery, but it's been great all season. No one knows why. It could be the warm waters. Regardless, it's still good quality stuff, and so with quota left in front of us, we're all going after it.
Talk to me a little bit about the early start and about the weather problems, but it sounds like it's been pleasantly improving, I suppose, as the fishery's gone on here, but it did get off to a difficult start.
Well, everyone was late to the show with spawn showing up, spawn notice on the 14th, who knows how long it was going on, and here we are on the 29th, and it's the stocks still are going strong, no spawn out problems. This is one prolonged run. We've seen it before, it's happened in the 90s, you know, every year is different, and this is one of those different years. No one knows how long it's going to keep going.
Warner, you've been a part of this fishery for an awful long time. As you look out there, there were 17 seiners who started and two gillnetters who started. I don't know what or who's still left on the grounds, but how do you reflect on the participation versus kind of the heyday 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Well, that's a reflection of, you know, look at how many markets were out buying in the 80s and 90s when the yen was strong and people actually wanted this row, and there's so many planes that look like the Oshkosh Airways overhead. But there's a considerable drop in the interest in Kazunoko. There's other uses that people are looking at, meal and surimi, and it's hasn't taken the place of the Kazunoko demand, so the price has dropped dramatically, and as we take the whole quota, I'm sure it'll remain at a low level.
When you look at these herring, and outside of your day job as fleet manager for Icicle, you've been exploring putting together some smoked herring canned product that met with good reception from a number of chefs and restaurateurs and other folks. Do you see a future? I mean, what's come of that over the last 2 years for you? Do you see a future that we could use this abundant resource for something other than a roe market that doesn't seem so interested in it anymore?
Well, that's my hope. I handed out here in the 80s, and I was astounded that all the industrial effort trying to produce Kazunoko that a very small market consumes. And I thought, and a few years ago when Larry Jones on the Kustatan brought me a sample of his canned smoked herring in Togiak, I thought, dang, this is good stuff. We're eating the wrong part of the fish. So I think it's great stuff, and one person trying to pioneer this thing, I don't have much hope. I really don't. But there's a chance. We'll see.
Warner, when you talk to people who don't know about Togiak herring in particular, what do you tell them that's different about this resource and the fish that show up here from Sitka Sound in British Columbia?
Well, I tell them these are the biggest herring in the Pacific. They're older and bigger for their age than the rest of the herring in the Pacific. Oil content is 12% oil. And that's
pretty damn good eating stuff.
Thanks so much, Warner Liu, fleet manager at iSchool Seafood, speaking to us this morning from aboard the Gordon Jensen. Wish you and your fleet and everybody out there a good season, whether it lasts another couple of days or another week. Good luck out there.
Thanks for the chat, Dave. Talk to you later.
Continuing this week's program, let's check in briefly with two of Alaska Public Radio Network's reporters about what's happening on their beats. Andrew Kitchiman is in Juneau, and Liz Ruskin is covering the State Republican Party Convention in Fairbanks for a quick dose of state and party politics. First to Juneau. Andrew, thanks for the time. It's the 102nd day of the legislative session. Tell us, what's the action down there? It seems to be quiet of late.
Yes. Yeah, so as soon as the regular session ended, now coming close to 2 weeks ago, most of the committee shut down their work. Most of the non-budget related core bills were passed or set aside. And so attention's really focused on a couple things since then. One was this large-scale overhaul of criminal sentencing law, which looks like it's going to go through. A version of the bill was released by the Senate Finance Committee. The purpose of the bill is basically to reduce the number of prisoners and to improve reintegration and improve treatment of prisoners with drug problems so that they are less likely to commit crimes in the future. The big bill in Juneau now is the oil and gas tax credit bill, which is opposed by industry. The current version of the bill is much scaled back from what the governor proposed, and probably scaled back so much that the governor wouldn't sign it and the Democrats wouldn't support it. Because this oil and gas tax credit bill is so important and so big, everything now is revolving around that and whether a compromise can be worked out.
Okay. Would you say that we are any closer to having a finalized budget or a way to pay for it?
Well, we're closer than we were at the end of the scheduled session, the 90 days, which was now 12 days ago. But we're not a lot closer. There's still much ground that needs to be covered, likely on both sides, to reach a compromise. I think getting the oil and gas tax credit bill done will open up all of the other bills that are left, the budget bill, the bill that would restructure the permanent fund and allow the state to finish its work and for the legislators to shift their focus to next fall's election.
I suppose the next question is, will this go into a special session? And if so, do we know yet where that will be? I know that lawmakers had asked to move it to the road system. There's some construction happening down in Juneau. What's your sense of that at this point?
Well, as we're talking today, there are moving vans outside of the Capitol, and today's really the main day for finishing work on getting everyone outside of the Capitol. We're going to go over to a building called the Bill Ray Center. Legislators are going to have their office there. Committees are going to be able to meet there, and that's starting on Monday. And once they're set up there, as long as the legislature needs to do work this year, they can probably do it there.
Last question, and just a few seconds here to wrap up, but what's the mood amongst the folks in Juneau at the moment?
Just like there's 60 opinions on the oil and gas tax bill, there's 60 different moods, I would say. It's hard to characterize. You talk to one legislator, and they're hopeful. You talk to another a couple of minutes later, and they're very glum. So I think it's impossible to gauge where things are headed still. I think the fact that both sides still seem to be moving a little bit on the oil and gas tax credit bill can give people hope, but there isn't the kind of movement that would need to happen for a compromise to happen. And so it's really tough to say.
All right. Andrew Kitchiman is APRN's reporter in the state capitol. Andrew, thanks so much for the update this morning.
Good to talk with you, Dave.
Now we're going to go to Fairbanks. Alaska Republicans are meeting there for their convention, picking delegates to go to Cleveland this summer. They were welcomed in this rather clever video message from Congressman Don Young.
GOP? What is a GOP? Welcome to the 2016. This convention. Who wrote this? Why don't you just put him down? I'll just wing it.
Say what you will about the man, but the aging congressman never ceases to amuse. APRN's Liz Ruskin, normally in Washington, D.C., is at the convention in Fairbanks. Liz, thanks for joining us on this program.
Yeah, thank you.
So you're in Fairbanks. What's the mood? Are Alaska Republicans kind of excited about this year's race now more than they were at the PPP, or what's the sense?
I think this group is very excited, and it's kind of a family reunion sort of spirit here where everybody seems happy to be seeing each other, and yet there's some undercurrents of tension and competition, and there's a lot going on here.
Okay, remind us again what's at stake out of this convention. How many delegates will Alaska send, and who are they going for at this point?
28 delegates. Three are chosen because of their party positions. And 25 will be awarded here, and in all of the 28, it'll be 12 for Cruz, 11 for Trump, and 5 for Marco Rubio.
So Alaska went for Ted Cruz, but not by a whole lot, and since that, I think that Mr. Trump has gained momentum, more and more momentum around the country. Do you get the sense Alaskans are softening to the idea of him being the nominee?
You know, to be honest, I don't see a lot of movement there. I've still met some never Trump people. The people who are for Trump are, you know, steadfast for him. They are running around trying to get the best delegates they can for him. No, I would not say they're coming to consensus at this point. No. There was a decision last night by the Central Committee to basically to have Marco Rubio keep his five delegates, and if they had decided otherwise, it would have meant Trump would have had three additional delegates from Alaska, and the group decided not to give him those, at least not in the first, you know, he doesn't go into the convention in Cleveland with those additional delegates.
Okay, now Liz, one more question there, and aside from that issue, do you get the sense that Alaska Republicans are not dealing with like what happened in Colorado and other locations? Are they at least happy with the process?
Yeah, I think that their decision to go into Cleveland with the same split that was decided at the presidential preference poll, I think that shows that they do like their process and they do like the proportional allocation of delegates.
All right. Liz Ruskin is APRN's reporter in the nation's capital this week, reporting from Fairbanks at the Republican convention. Liz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's some of what's happening outside this week, the Beyond portion of our title. For some reason, this seems to be kind of a slow time of year in Bristol Bay. KDLG's Molly Dishner and Hannah Colton set out this week to see what is happening in your world. They filed this postcard of Area Voices.
Hi, my name is Theo Chesley. I'm in Nelson Lagoon. There hasn't been any herring around here that we've seen. If it was around up north of here, probably came and went already. Well, lately here, and there just hasn't been hardly any mammals at all. A few whales that are migrating, very few. No real signs of bird activity in the water, like seagulls, you know, feeding off of smolt or whatever. Pretty quiet on the fishing end right now. Everybody's just sort of in between seasons. I think, for the most part, cod and pollock are over. And some guys are just might be doing a little bit of jigging for gray cod, but other than that, guys are just getting geared up for salmon.
Sure, my name is Aubrey Roma. I've lived out here in Lake Nigik, and I've homeschooled.
I am Logan Ball. I started late in the year. Like I don't think I started till October, so I'm not gonna get done till like the end of May. But you're closer to done, aren't you?
I'm done.
You are done?
Well, technically speaking, my mom said we need to work in the garden, and we've got a bunch of summer chores. So I said, okay, I can miss a few lessons of geometry. I'm good.
Hi, my name is Kaylin, and our city is Dillingham.
and I'm excited for going on summer vacation.
Hi, my name is Jens, and I'm excited about going to see my grandma and grandpa in Iowa. It will be really fun. We're going to be going to a lot of places there, and I'm excited to go to Minnesota after.
My name is Brian Abraham. I'm from Kilgak, Alaska. You can see the greens already, the green grass growing. Sign of spring, you know. My sister had went to the Tobiac River a couple of days ago, and she was surprised to see an Arctic tern, which usually comes like next month, May. So everything is early. I think it's a warming trend in my point of view, or a climate change. People are more so in that somber stage right now because I think it's people are not really not on the move yet, but then you can see other families heading out to get ducks or seal or whatnot. But it's a little quiet here.
You're at what we call Moody's Marina, and this is John and Dan. We both live here. Lake Leknagik in the village. Picking up my net right now. I got my king net all sewed up and ready to go.
Didn't have enough anchor rope on the top.
Oh, we'll add our anchors when we go to set it, that's all. Gotta get the sticks out of my net. Net's ready to go.
Yeah.
Just gotta find some fish.
Yeah.
Waiting for them to happen. But I'm getting ready to put in my potatoes because they take a few weeks to come out of the ground. And I'm thinking with this early spring-like year that, you know, I might be able to get away with it this year. So I'm going to plant a bunch of my potatoes at least a couple weeks earlier than I normally do. The lady across the way was telling me, put a little Epsom salt on your rhubarb. I gave her a bunch of plants and suddenly her plants were bigger than mine. And their trick was Epsom salt, so I put a little bit of that on there, and they seem to be doing really good already this year. I got all my starts in the kitchen, you know. They're looking really well this year. Got tons of sun, you know. Other than that, just trying to get things done, ready for spring, you know.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. For our Friday conversation this week, I'm happy to be joined by Nathan Hill, the manager for the Lake and Peninsula Borough. Lake and Penn's 17 communities are spread out over an area the size of West Virginia and are as different as Chignik Bay from Pedro Bay and as far apart as Perryville to Port Allsworth. Hill sat down with me last week in Anchorage to talk about how the borough was weathering tough fiscal times and more. Nathan, good to have you on. We don't get to sit down together very often.
Good to see you, Dave. Good to be here.
So let's talk about Lake and Penn and the fiscal situation that's at hand. Challenging times?
Yeah. We obviously are in tune with what's going on with the state and trying to figure out what it all means. We're tightening our belt, being proactive about our spending and thinking about planning into the future and how to make that sustainable.
Before we get into those plans for the future, let's talk a little bit about what your finances look like for the borough. This is 17 communities, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your general revenue per year? What's your general expenses per year? And what do you have stored away for the rainy day?
We get our revenue mostly from fish taxes. The state revenue sharing has comprised about 20% of our revenue over the years, so that 20% equates to about $500,000 from the state in revenue sharing, and generally in fish taxes we're exceeding $1 million. I don't know if we've ever broken 2 million, but
that fluctuates on the size of the catch and the value of the
catch. Last year we had a phenomenal catch. Unfortunately, the price fell by 50%, and so we ended up with just over $1 million in raw fish tax. So, and the other revenue that we are being proactive about, and we see, I think we've gotten about close to $300,000 in the last year out of the tourism. It's hunting, fishing, and guiding taxes that come out of that. And so that we've spent a lot of time and energy looking at that. We've also got land leases that we do. Set netters come in and lease land from us. So there's a number of revenue streams, but fishing is a big one, and of course state revenue sharing.
Roughly what's your revenue in a year?
2.5, somewhere in that neighborhood.
All right, and expenses?
Probably about $4 million.
Probably about
$4 million. 3 to $4 million, yeah.
Okay. And what do you have stored away for the rainy day? Lake and Penn has a much larger fund than I think a lot of communities do.
Between us and the school district, we're more than $15 million.
So that would cover a few years and some real rainy days.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the proactive measures that the borough is looking at to meet tighter financial times from the state.
We've already, you know, energy, education, and transportation are the things that we focus on, and a lot of that is capital projects. A lot of that is education. We do contribute a healthy share of funding to education, but we've been proactive. The school district has made many cuts across the board to try to close their gap. They've had a little bit of a shortfall over the past few years, and they've been working on it, and with the borough, we've reduced our staff by 20%, which is only one staff member. Mm-hmm. There's now four of us working full-time for the borough. And we are looking at this revenue stream, kind of an analysis of the different revenue streams that we get from fishing to the bed tax to the guide tax that we have, and making sure that folks that are operating in our area are paying their taxes. And so we aren't sustainable right now with the way we're operating, but I think in the interim, in the next few years, we will be able to develop a structure that will become sustainable.
Okay. At one of your assembly meetings, I remember there was discussion about these taxes on guides and the tourism industry, because throughout the Lake and Peninsula Borough, there is an enormous number of people who come in to fish and hunt and Bearview. They don't all come through King Salmon. Some come from Homer. Some come straight from Anchorage. But there was talk about refining that process of finding all these people and putting the appropriate or raising the tax on the guide. I heard the figure roughly $6 million could be raised annually if that tax was raised and sought after the way it could be. Is that something that's still being looked at?
Yeah, I mean, we're exploring a variety of revenue stream ideas, and that is definitely on the list. The interesting part of the taxes that are generated right now is it isn't the hunting, guiding, and fishing. That doesn't generate the lion's share of the tourism money, tax dollars. There's a lot of bird viewing, bear viewing, hiking, just kind of outdoor adventure types of operations that, you know, they're coming through the parks in the tens of thousands, and they're actually bolstering the revenue stream substantially. So I think looking at that is definitely going to be on our radar, and we're, you know, right now in discussion. It's a focused brainstorm, I guess you could call it.
Okay. I remember talking to your mayor, Glenn Allsworth, on the 25th anniversary of the birth of the borough.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something interesting to me that stood out. He said, I don't know that this was a good idea. I think it is, but it's something that all of us in Lake and Penn need to ask ourselves every year. Are we better off for being a borough or not, and consider the future thereof? And I was struck by that, because he's been your mayor all 27 years now. Do you feel like Lake and Penn is better off as a borough, its communities, and do you think it will stand the test of these tough fiscal times together?
I think that's an excellent question to continue asking ourselves. My answer to that is yes. I do believe that the communities in the borough benefit from having the borough in place. We've got an education system that competes very strongly with the education systems on the rail belt. That's a direct effect of being a borough. We've gotten infrastructure projects into communities like this current Chignik Bay multi-community dock facility that's going in. putting that together and getting the funding. I have a hard time seeing that happening had the borough not been involved. We continue to see benefits across the board with energy, education, transportation, and the attempt to keep the cost of living down. So I do believe our communities benefit, and we are definitely not a top-heavy government. We are very minimally staffed. We don't spend a lot of money on ourselves or our assembly or our school board. And I have to wholeheartedly agree with the mayor on his comment that, A, we have to, you know, come back to this question frequently. And if the answer is ever no, then maybe we can think about doing things differently. But for now, I do believe the borough is positioned in the best possible way for the communities it serves.
Nathan Hill is the manager of the Lake and Peninsula Borough. Nathan, thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
It's May. It's May. The lusty month of May. That lovely month when everyone goes blissfully astray. It's here, that shocking time of year when tons of wicked little thoughts merrily appear.
Well, it's almost May, but right now it's still April, and that means it's National Poetry Month. And what better way to close out the month and this program than with some poetry here? Fans of verse in Dillingham will get together tonight for a poetry reading and competition, and KDLG News spoke with several aspiring lyricists yesterday. Ninth grader Sadie Sands plans on performing three original poems. Her shortest entry is titled A Million Masks.
I wear a million masks. I cannot name them all, but they contain a piece of me, however big or small. One can be of courage to try a scary thing. One can be of leadership, where I strive to be a king. One may be a quiet, shy, timid little girl. One may be a playful dancer, finishing with a twirl. I am many things, confusing, yes, but true. I wear many masks. But then again, don't you?
Acting differently around different people or in different situations, that's something we probably all do and rarely acknowledge. San says she often uses poetry this way to express things that are hard to talk about.
Yes, I do. Oh, I really wouldn't go up to someone and say, do you wear a lot of masks? But I guess more in the non-literal, I do very much so. It's just kind of a way to, like, ask people stuff or tell people stuff that I normally wouldn't say.
My poems are slim bombs craving explosion, wrote Canadian poet Robert Curry, reminding us that poetry often uses vivid imagery to great effect. Sounds, sights, and smells in poetry can summon emotions and memories. Sophomore Sue Lee wrote this one called Flashback.
The ground is hot, it bubbles to the top, you know that it won't stop. You jump around so you won't get a burn, but you only have 5 steps and your stomach churns. The slide seems so far away, and as you begin to leap, your body begins to sway. You make your way there, but in 6 steps, you are seen, now you're it next.
Lee wrote that in a creative writing class. She says her teacher, Miss Budbill, sent everyone outside to find some inspiration.
That was the day we actually went to the playground, and she wanted us to, like, think about our childhood, and it just reminded me of what I used to play when I was little.
The shortest poem that we heard was also the heaviest. 10th grader Michael Schlosser made this piece by blacking out all but 6 words from a newspaper clipping.
It says, I retrieve bodies from frozen rivers. I found it in the newspaper. It was an article on a wreck that happened in a boat, and they found the bodies after the river had frozen, and just blacked out just to get credit, I guess.
It may have been done hastily for a class assignment, but that doesn't mean it wasn't sincere. Schlosser says he was thinking of how many snow machine wrecks end up in the rivers.
Because the past few years we haven't had any snow, and it hasn't been freezing lots, so rivers aren't closed and people from Manicotok can't go from Manicotok to here and all that other type of stuff. So people try and make it and can't make it and end up in the river, you know. It's actually happened to my Uncle Don. It's actually, yeah, it's pretty heavy. Just tell people to be careful crossing rivers.
10th grade student Ashton Cavanaugh also wrote from his own experience. Cavanaugh says he was thinking of all the good things he sees people do for each other when he wrote this one.
Yesterday, somewhere, someplace, somehow, someone had a problem. And now, whatever that problem was, it isn't. Something solved that problem. Someone helped that other someone. Just reach out their hand and said, "Here, let me help you." That help came in the form of an outstretched hand. It's amazing how one small gesture can change things. Sprinkle a few words on top and you've made a world of difference. Remember this, the next time you see someone with an issue, don't just throw them a tissue, you say something. You say something nice, say something kind. Most of all, you say something helpful. Don't just say something, do something. Hold out your hand and say, "Here, let me help you." Because today, tomorrow, or the next day, the day after that, someone, somewhere, somehow, will have a problem. And if you are that someone, wouldn't you want help too?
You'll hear more from Ashton Cavanaugh and other local poets at Dillingham's second annual Poetry Slam tonight at the elementary school gym. Well, that's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of KDLG's Bristol Band Beyond at our website. Please send feedback, tips, and ideas to news@kdlg.org. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks to Molly Dishner and Hannah Colton for their help this week. Adios, April, ye most boring of months in Southwest Alaska. Bring on May, the month of Yes, You May.
It's wild.